Welcome back once again. It's great to have all of you here. 277th time, Parish of the Patriots. Most of you I know are return listeners. I appreciate you coming back. If a particular, we're 277 shows in. If you're a first time listener and you listen this time, you're like, nah, that ain't my cup of tea. At least pick one random show and listen to it. Either way, I'm glad you're back. I appreciate you. If you are new, first time stopping by, I'm glad. I hope you'll listen to the whole thing. We do have a Christian specific segment. A sermon, if you would, is roughly, very roughly the halfway mark of the show. I put it separate in case you're just an absolute spurg and you can't stand to hear anything about Jesus. You bound and determined to go to hell. That's okay. You can listen to the first part of the show because I don't care if you're bound and determined to go to hell. Knock yourself out. But I do highly encourage you to listen to it. I think it'll be something you find that is not. It's not what you're expecting. If you do listen to the show, obviously you are. You're here. If you get done and you say that show was pretty good, not only did it not suck, it was actually pretty good. I got something out of it. I appreciate you putting something in. We pass the offering plate around just like anywhere else. Here at the Parish of the Patriots, we pass the plate around. This is that time. Don't be shy. Pay them tithes. All you got to do is look here on the description page for the show here at Radio Albion. And you know what? We got the ultimate privacy coin. Snail mail. Snail mail. That's it. And I have actually had, bless y'all's hearts, I'm not making fun of nobody. I'm really not. I find things humorous. I have had people be like, so how do I go about this? See, I'm old. I can't wrap my mind around that. I can't wrap my mind around, you know, I got snail mail. Here's the address. And younger folks be like, well, how do I go about doing that? It's like you address an envelope. What do you mean? If you can fill out a check, oh, wait, a check? What's a check? And that's how you know you're getting old. You're talking about writing checks and addressing envelopes. Young people be looking like, what you on about? Envelope addressing. I ain't never addressed an envelope in my life. How do I do that again? Maybe I should, like, where I put the address, I should take that and turn it into like a drawing of an envelope, like where the address goes, your return address up here, which may or may not be your actual name and return address. That's up to you. I don't know, you know. And over in this corner, you put the stamp. How much is a stamp? You go to your post office in your country, whatever that may be. If you're in the U.S., you just put a regular stamp on it. If you're going to send me your life history in the envelope and it's real heavy, you might take it up there and make sure you might need two stamps or something. They can tell you how much. If you're sending it out of the country, you go up there and say, I got to mail this to America. And they'll say, oh, okay, here's how much it is. It's probably a flat rate for just a regular envelope. Don't know how. Yes, it was this envelope thing. What is this envelope thing of which you speak, Grandpa? It's not hard. It's much easier than sending crypto, I can tell you that. And there ain't no damn blockchain. Ain't nobody gonna be tracing your blockchain. You just put it in the mail. I like it. I kind of went off doing this as kind of an experiment. And the longer the experiment drags on, the more I like it. I like snail mail. I like old things. I still write checks from time to time. Not, don't get me wrong. I ain't old enough that I'm those old people like you go to the store and like the old people up there and you like waiting in the line. You want to get your stuff. And the old person, like, they get their total and it's like, oh, okay. And they start digging around. And you know that old lady digging out a checkbook. And you're like, ain't nobody go to the grocery store and pay with a check no more, Grandma. Come on now. That's right. You got a check card. You ever try to explain that? You try to explain that to old people? You're like, you don't have to write a check anymore. Well, yes, I do. I don't want to put it on a credit card. Well, that's why the bank, see, the next card, this is Visa or whatever on it that the bank gave you. You use that, and it's just like writing a check, only we don't have to stand here and wait. You just put it in there. I'm still writing a check. Bless their heart. Yeah, hard to change the older you get. I'm sympathetic, but I'm just laughing at it. You're like, oh my gosh, grandma gonna write a check. Grandma appearing the checkout line. Everybody standing here waiting. She digging out that damn check. I still write checks, not the grocery store, but for certain bills. I write a check. Some of y'all, see, I know the age of y'all sometimes. Like, you know, if you look at the how to use the mail option there, I even put on there if you send in checks or money order. See, if you send me a check, I kind of already know how old you are, at least. There's like a minimum age. Because there ain't no 20-year-old writing Grandpa Dan no check. You see, if how do I do an envelope is a challenge, I know that part that says how to do checks or money orders that's right there with it. See, y'all ain't even going to look at them instructions because you're struggling with this envelope. Address, postage. What is this heresy of which you speak? What is? Anyway. Yeah. Writing checks. Y'all write me a check. And I'm like, for some of y'all, most don't. Some of y'all write a check. And I already know something about you. I know about at least a minimum age bracket that you fall into because you know how to fill one out. Not only do you know what it is, you know how to fill it out. Fun stuff. And if you're younger and that stuff is a mystery to you, I'm not making fun of you. I understand that y'all, you know, there's a different world. And most of my bills I pay online just like the rest of y'all do. I get it, but it's just funny. It's funny to see the way that, I don't know, I guess things change. Like, you know, those old things still have a place, you know. The analog method still has a place. You know, you joke about, and I'm not going on and on about sending money. This ain't it. I've just got on this subject and completely unscripted as always. And I just find it funny and interesting. You got all these different cryptocurrencies. And like Monero is supposed to be one of your really privacy coins. But then you got to do this whole thing of turning it into Bitcoin because like a lot of exchanges, especially if they associate with the U.S., see, they don't want you to have privacy. They want to be able to track your blockchain so it's not private at all. But the idea with cryptocurrency originally was it was kind of a semi-private way to go about your transactions and it winds up being very private at all. And you got all these different ones, various shit coins that come out. Yeah, you got all these different ones and they tout some little niche thing that supposedly they do. And you think, well, I didn't even know they needed to do that. And then big thing about privacy. You see, this cryptocurrency is more private. People be talking about, well, see, what you do is you send this crypto over to this address and then you do this and then you send it and nobody can track it. I mean, just put it some damn cash in an envelope and wrap it up in a piece of paper. Doesn't get more privacy related. See, people try to work so hard to reinvent the wheel. And it's like the regular wheel works just fine. Let's hit the listener supporter mailbag. GPD, I pray all goes well for you. As a nation, we're screwed. That's from Mr. T. And that wraps up our listener supporter mailbag. See, didn't take long. We're 8 minutes in. I've just done all this rambling and the listener supporter mailbag. Didn't take long at all. Now, I'm going to use this for something to go off on because I got to have something to talk about. I mostly do the show. I'm going to let you in on a spoiler. Most of you have been listening while you already pretty much understand it. I do this show for the Christian specific segment. The rest of this shit in the beginning, I just do it because I always have. So there's no telling what you get. Don't get me wrong. I put effort into all of it. I laugh and whatnot. But the first part of the show, I just talk about whatever I want to. And it's hard because I'm doing those daily nationalists on Monday and Friday now. And like 90% of that content is stuff that normally I would do here in the first part of the show. So it comes time to do the show. This is the show for me. This is my normal show. And I'm like, well, heck, everything I was going to talk about was on whatever Monday or Friday daily nationalist. Anyway. Thank you, Mr. T. This gives me something to jump off from. Nation. You know, hope all goes for you. It's for nation. We're screwed. We don't have a nation. The you and me. See, the nation is a people. We don't have a nation. What do you want to call this thing is up to you. But America isn't a nation. You can't call a nation is a people. There was a, when you read your history books and you read about, I don't know, the German nation, everybody understood it's the German nation. Why? Because Germans live there. If you go to Germany, you know what you're going to see? A bunch of big old squarehead Germans talking German. Squareheads. I hadn't heard that term in a long time. Square. I'm not even sure where that came from. I didn't notice them having particularly square heads. Germans in the audience going to be like, you call me squarehead one more time. I said, put your name in. But if you went to Germany, you're going to see Germans. You understood that was the German nation because that's where Germanics live. If you want to see French people, you're going to go to France. But now France looks like Bangladesh or some shit. Ain't no nation. It seems like, you know, I don't know. Maybe it seems like I'm just picking at a small thing. But I think the words we use and the vocabulary we use, the way we define things, I think it's important because the words we use and the words we speak, it helps our mind. We're helping our mind. We're working through our mind, putting things in order. One of the reasons they constantly bombard us with lies, bullshit, doublespeak. They're constantly redefining what a word means. They do that because it's an attack on your mind. When you speak things and you're particular about the words you use, it matters because you're helping your own mind put things in order. Does that make sense? We don't live in a nation. If we lived in a nation, then a certain group of people would live there and you would understand that's what you're going to see. You know, or what you're going to see. We don't have a nation because we have a multicultural, for better words, you got a multicultural kind of, I don't know, economic zone or something ruled over, you know, by a government of sorts. In America, if you live in America, you live in the American Empire. It is an empire by all classic definitions. It's a country. I use the term country. This is my choice. I just use the term country, but it's not a nation. By the traditional definition of the term. That ship sailed a long time ago. It did. That ship's gone. Ship done left the harbor. That ship's done gone over the horizon of the flat earth or whatever. Whatever the hell. Now, I'm not trying to start that. But it's gone. The ship sailed. We don't have a nation. Except that. I laugh when I read people writing articles talking about we got to find a way to save America. What do you define America as? Because it damn sure isn't a nation. The country? You turn the government around or something. What do you want to do? I said before, I laugh a lot when I see people they're hung up on. They talk about they don't like all of this immigrants coming in here. And then the same people turn around and talk about we miss the days of the melting pot. It's like, you ain't even got a clue how you got where you are today. The melting pot's how you got here because that never existed. It was a lie. That's part of the other piece of where old people, people who get older, have a hard time letting go of the old ways. You know, when you hear an older person talk about the melting pot, see, that ain't no different. That's a philosophical equivalent of standing there buying the groceries and writing a damn check. They just can't help it. They just attached to that. They writing that damn check. They believing in the mail. We could just, this immigration be fine if we got back to the melting pot. And melting pot. They don't understand. Okay. Melting pot. They, when foreigners come and live among you, as long as it's a small number, yeah, they're going to blend in, you know. If you dropped me into Best Korea, a.k.a. North Korea, and said, Dan, You're going to go live the rest of your life in North Korea. I'm going to be looking around at how people behave, how people dress, how they go around, the way they speak. I have a hard time with the Korean. My Korean is very limited. I do speak a little tiny, tiny, tiny bit, but it's not enough to do anything. But the point is, I'm going to do everything I can to blend in. I'm going to be out there at the parades waving the flag, hailing Leader Kim. Because I know my bright white ass is standing out like a sore thumb. I'm trying to blend in. That's the way it works. And see, people here, people in America, they got propagandized. They believed that meant there was a melting pot, and those people are now just like us. But they're not. They're just trying to blend in, which is a normal thing to do. People don't understand. I say, baby, foreigners living among you, by the way, that's a normal thing. You still have a nation, and you still have some foreigners living among you. That's a normal thing. You just are. You know? I see people get off into, I'm sorry, extreme autism, and they talking about, we're going to build an ethno state, and then we're going to have DNA tests. You ain't coming across a border unless you pass the DNA test. And you're looking around like, man, we're a long way from that now, ain't we? We ain't even got a nation. We just got country, I guess you could call it. You're always going to have foreigners living among you. You know? When the Bible talks about, you know, treat the foreigners in your nation, you know, treat them fairly. You know, don't be wicked towards the foreigners. It doesn't mean open the border and let everybody come in. It just means you're always going to have this few small number of people living among you. Don't take advantage of them. Don't be an asshole to them. You know? It didn't mean open the border and let everybody. Of course, these are the same type of people that talk about Jesus was a refugee. They were going back home to pay their taxes. What the hell are you even talking about? Just traveling. Like if I was going from Texas, Louisiana, I'm a refugee. Anyway, reality is we ain't got no nation. You know, and I guess one could argue about America anyway. You know, but I mean, like the old nations in Europe, you know, Germany, France, Italy, all whatever. It was a distinct people that lived there. And that's how you define that area. Those distinct peoples lived there. Those were the nations. And you understood what it meant. Ain't that way now. You go to one of these European nations, you might as well go to Somalia or whatever. You're going to see the same people there. All blended in. Talk about people conspiring to destroy the nation. That ship done sailed. You ain't got a nation no more. You got an economic zone ruled over by an illegitimate government that tries to create this illusion. We got Trump's debate with Biden coming up. I think that's Thursday. I probably just going to wind up looking at some highlight. I may, if I ain't got nothing going on, but I probably will. Because I really have almost zero interest in the political theater. The only thing I find interesting is, what are they going to do about Biden? I've talked about this before. But they ain't going to be able to roll actual Joe Biden up there. I mean, that's not going to happen. They're going to have to put an actor in there. I mean, that's all I can see. Because I think Joe Biden is beyond the point. See, a year or so ago, they could pump him up with amphetamines or whatever it is they give. I don't know what they give him. But they could pump him up with something and keep him coherent for a limited amount of time. And you could see the drugs wearing off. Like, if he was at a long deal making a speech, he would start off pretty strong. He'd be like, hey, this old man doing all right. But if it went on long enough, you could literally like see the drugs wearing off, because he'd start kind of going off, kind of like me. You'd be like, Dan, your drugs are wearing off, because you're getting off on a tangent, like Biden wandering. No, because my thoughts can be strung together. You just have to follow them. Longtime listeners know this is nothing new. But no, they can pump him up with enough drugs to keep him coherent for a certain set amount of time. And it's become pretty obvious now that he can't do that any longer. We passed that point. And it's funny, because when it comes to these appearances, you can tell if you're getting the real Joe Biden. Like when you saw that Juneteenth video. You saw that Juneteenth video. That's the real Joe Biden. He's standing there looking around like, where are all these black people here? Why are they dancing? I don't understand. People with dementia, people in a mental decline like that, they're always confused, so it's very frightening for them. You know? And you can see that look of fear in his face and people making fun of it. And I can understand that because the guy's an asshole. You know, I mean, even before this happened, he was an asshole. So it's hard to feel sorry for him. But still, when you see that look on his face, that's a look of fear because he doesn't understand. He's confused. He doesn't understand what's going on around him. If he had a family that gave a shit about him, they wouldn't let him be in that position. But you see, that's what happens when you live your life being an asshole. You're going to wind up with people in your life, even your own family, won't give a shit about you because you lived your life being an asshole. You know, Dr. Jill, she don't give a shit. She can keep that son of a bitch dragging him around because she's getting hers. Anyway. Now, all of a sudden, you have Joe Biden up there talking like, and he looks completely different. Like, you look at him and it's like, wait a minute. It didn't look like anything like the confused man at the speech I saw the other day. It's a conspiracy theory, but I would say they have actors that take up certain roles. Now, they're either going to have to cancel that debate or they're going to have to put one of the actors in there is all it is. And one thing, if they put one of the actors in there, if they put one of the actors in there, which, again, I don't see unless they find an excuse to cancel the debate. You know, maybe Israel will go ahead and launch their war on Lebanon on that day. And they'll just say, whoa, the president had to rush back to the White House because we have a national emergency. If they go through with the debate, I don't see where they have any choice but to put one of the actors in. That's my opinion. I know opinions are kind of quasi-illegal now in the land of the free. But in my opinion, their only choice would be to put one of the actors in. Because they ain't going to put the Joe Biden up there. And in this, I'm curious. And if they do go through with the debate, and if they do put one of the actors in there, the fact that Trump won't call that out will let you know, once again, this is all theater. If they put one of the actors and Trump stands up there, which he will, or I think he would, and Trump stands up there and acts like, yeah, I'm really talking to Joe Biden here. And you're sitting there watching like, oh, that's Joe Biden number three or whatever. And Trump going along with the game, acting like it's real. Would be funny if Trump be like, who is this guy? But what do you mean that's President Biden? That ain't President Biden. Come on now. Everybody watching knows that ain't him. Who's this guy? Scratch on that latex. See if it comes off. I think that's a mask. The makeup. And Joe Biden. In fact, he's going to go along with it. It's all theater. Now, that part's the one thing I'm interested in. Of course, it would be highly entertaining if they did actually have the gall to send the real Joe Biden out there, because it's just going to be, it'd be sad. If they did that, that would be the official signal that they're throwing this guy over the bus. They're going to do something else. Probably Trump made a deal. Or are they going to roll someone else up for Team D? It doesn't matter because, again, they're all pre-selected. It's all theater. I've said this before, but Trump's bargaining point on this deal is he knows they can't run Biden. That it's not going to be viable. Even with their election. Well, I mean, they can. The elections are phony. More people are starting to catch on that the whole voting thing is just a gimmick. It doesn't make any difference. But it's in their best interest to try to keep as many people bought into the system as possible. So, you know, his strong negotiating point is, you need me, and he's trying to make a deal. I've said this many times before. Now, they may roll somebody else out. I don't know. It's all fake anyway. Anyway, that's the one thing I'm interested in. Are they going to, which Joe Biden are they going to roll out? Because they ain't going to be able to roll out. If they roll out the real one, and it will inevitably turn into the disaster that we all know it would be. That's the official, they're throwing him overboard. Whether that means they're bringing someone else in, or whether that means they've officially made a deal with Trump, closed the deal with Trump, whatever. Means what it means. Probably still ain't going to watch it. I just read about it, watch some clips the next day or whatever the hell. Anyway, let's go ahead and get into the Christian specifics there. I've rambled along enough. I'm in the mood. Let's do this thing. You know what to do? Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon at the Parish of the Patriots. And looking ahead here, going through our Christian specific segment, I think we'll have time to discuss several different things. But I thought we'd start off talking about what it means to walk with the Lord, because that's a term Christian believers use a lot. Walking with the Lord, or, you know, walking with Jesus. And I thought we'd bear down on that a little bit. You know, what does that actually mean? Because people get this, I don't know, I've seen people have this idea, like this attitude, and they'll tell you, this, of course, would be more prevalent in your MCC. This is often the case. But this attitude, you know, they say, I'm walking with you. I ain't worried. The Lord is walking with me. But what does that mean? I was thinking of this the other day, and, you know, where is Jesus? If you're walking with the Lord, where is he in your walk? Where is he positioned? I would propose that Jesus doesn't walk behind anybody. Say that again. Jesus, if you say you're walking with the Lord, bear in mind, Jesus doesn't walk behind anybody. So if you're walking with Jesus, he'd better be in front of you. As such, you will find that you will wind up in the places that you need to be because you're following him. You see, you're walking with Jesus as long as you have that in your mind correctly, where you're positioned. It means you're going where he's leading. You're going where he wants to go. We don't like to do that, do we? People don't like to do that. People want to go where they want to go. And yet you have Christian believers that are going wherever the hell they want to go. And yet they're talking about it, but it's going to be okay because I'm walking with Jesus. Like they're dragging Jesus around wherever they go. Like an accessory. I'm dragging Jesus over here with me. I'm dragging Jesus over there with me. Then when it all blows up, it doesn't work. Wind up in a mess, and they don't understand why. Why wouldn't the Lord walk with me? Because the Lord doesn't walk behind any man. He walk in front of you, which means you better be following where he's going. Imagine if you were walking through a swamp full of quicksand, and there was a way to get through it, but you had to know the way. Luckily, you would hire a guide. You know, one of them swamp people from Louisiana. No teeth and you know, talking about gators and stuff. You'd had the swamp guy. And you're going to follow that swamp guy through the swamp. And that swamp guy probably look at you, you know, and be like, don't be getting anywhere. You be sure you walk everywhere I put my feet. Otherwise, you be up in that quicksand. You be gone. You're going to pay attention, ain't you? You can pay attention to swamp guy. Now, if you're just walking around your nice neighborhood and you seen the swamp guy, you wouldn't have anything to do with the swamp guy. No idea what this has anything to do with. You wouldn't have anything to do with the swamp guy because you'd be like, I ain't association with that. You know, rube. That swamp water coon ass. That's what they used to call people, certain people from certain areas of Louisiana. Louisiana coon ass. You didn't know that, did you? I ain't have nothing to do with no Louisiana coon ass, but you in the swamp surrounded by quicksand, you're going to follow the coon ass. You're going to follow him. And you're going to be sure you walking everywhere he puts his feet. You won't get sucked up in the quicksand. It's like that when we follow the Lord because there's so many things going on in the world. You're walking with Jesus, you want to be sure you were behind him and you're going where he's going. You're contributing to what he's doing. Because the minute you decide you don't like that direction and you think it'd be a lot better to go over here, it doesn't make any sense why the Lord is going this way when you can see over here. Be a lot quicker. going a straight line. Why is the Lord leading me around and about? And you step off into the quicksand. And you're in a mess. Because so much of the MCC is centered on the heresy, the false doctrine, that Jesus Christ equals a free ticket to sin, all you want, an all you want sin ticket without consequence. Now, this is more or less what boils down to their false doctrine. It leads to people in the MCC talking about walking with Jesus, and it means they think that they're dragging Jesus around behind them, that he's following them. And again, he doesn't do that. Lord, don't walk behind any man. They tell people, you come to Jesus just as you are. He accepts you just as you are. And that's true. You do come to Jesus just as you are. If you're going to wait, try to come to Jesus, and you're going to try to wait until you've got it all fixed, then you ain't never going to come. So that's part true. Where they step off into a mess is they basically tell people, because you're fine just as you are. There's no other effort required on your part. Just come as you are and stay as you are, instead of putting in the work. I was also thinking, kind of shifting gears a little bit here. Like I said, we should have time to get into several different things. And I think it's kind of fun when we get to cover several different things. I was thinking the other day, I was reading some story. I don't remember even what I do remember what it was about. It was about apparently the latest version, sequel, whatever the hell you want to call it, of the Star Wars franchise that Disney continues to just make a mess out of. I ain't going to watch it. And watched any of that stuff in many moons. I never even saw the Star Wars with that Jar Jar Binks in it. I saw the original Star Wars when I was a kid back in the 70s. And seen it in the theater because it was the thing. But I saw this story, and of course it's now lesbian space witches or some ridiculous crap. And it shows the woman who headed this whole project up, and she looks just like you ever notice they have that look. You see, you already know what the face is going to look like before you see the picture. And she has that look. And they have a special store for glasses for these people. Like they go to the store and it's like, I need the, I don't know, woke shit lib glasses frames. These are just for you. Perfect. That's what I wanted. But this got me reflecting. Yes, this has something to do with Christian specific segment, believe it or not. I was reflecting though on these people, generally speaking, these people who subvert, enter into an institution or take over a franchise or whatever and proceed to destroy it. We see this time and time again, whether it's institutions like scouting, obviously the government, the MCC, the Star Wars franchise, corporations, some of these big companies. These people come in to an institution and they proceed to destroy it from within. Now, I would propose to you that if you walk with the Lord long enough, you begin seeing spiritual patterns in a lot of things that have no, on the surface at least, no spiritual meaning. If you walk with the Lord and you seek the Lord long enough, you will begin to see the spiritual in things that on the surface to everybody else are going to say, you reading something that ain't there. You'll see them. You'll see the patterns. I've said this so many times, you know, you start understanding the patterns that God operates in, and then you start understanding the patterns that Satan operates in, the confines. And pretty soon you can start noticing those patterns in the way people themselves behave. As men, man was created what? In the image of God. And there's very many aspects to what that means. Man was created in the image of God. I believe one of these aspects of man being created in the image of God is the creative spark. We have a creative spark. You have this desire to create things. that is just, and this, you know, somebody may not be, you know, somebody rather may be, you know, what do I want to say? Agnostic. They may not even be of a religious nature, but you will see that because it's part of being made in the image of God. Man will have that creative spark, that drive to create something. This is reflective of the Creator God. Can you imagine the size of the creative spark that would lead the Lord to create time and this earth and a place to live and all of these intricate systems that will work together to keep everything in balance and harmony and everything working here and there? And it's a very complicated system. It would take a very large creative spark, one that we cannot imagine. And yet we'll see that creative spark in ourselves and in other people. Now, it doesn't mean everybody's an artist or a designer. Creative spark can take many forms. If you have a machine that doesn't function and you set yourself forward to understand how the machine operates, so that once you understand how it operates, you can figure out why it no longer works properly. And once you do all of that, then you proceed repairing the machine, replacing the parts, or building new parts or whatever it takes to get the machine going. That is all a sign of creative spark. You're taking something that doesn't work because it's now incomplete, because it's got broken parts or whatever, and you're putting it together. It can be little things. Maybe you like building models. That's your creative. Why? Think about it on a logical, you know, basis. Like the using worldly logic. Why the hell would you want to build models? What's making you want to do that is a sign of that spark, that creative spark. That's a sign that you're created, you're made in God's image. And there's some people that don't have that. You see, Satan doesn't create anything. He does not. He destroys things. That's what he does. He's a destroyer. Remember, the keys are all there for us. It's all written. Jesus said, by their works, you will know them. Remember, they asked Jesus, who are you? And he told them, way, truth, life, three words. That's who he is. He didn't give them a name. He said, way, truth, life. He explained who he was. He says, by their deeds, you will know them. In other words, you will know who they are. You will know what they are. When you see these people, you read these stories, and these people come into an institution and then proceed to destroy it. And you say, why? You know, why would they do that? Why do they come into a church and then proceed to destroy it from within, to change everything? Why don't they go make them their own church and create, you know, make up a brand new thing? And then nobody would care. They'd be over there and be like, well, you want to do the rainbow church of what's happening now? They're on the other side of town. They don't ever do that. They come into the existing church and destroy it within. Why? Because Satan doesn't create anything. The Pharisees, they weren't the only, they're not the only children of the devil. When you see people that completely do not have, they are lacking in that creative spark, that divine spark, that desire to create, and they only know how to go into something that's already been created and destroy it from within. Now, whose pattern is that? They're following the pattern of their father, the devil. They can't help it. They can't help it. You're not going to change that. You're not going to go to a person like that, that completely lacks a creative spark, no desire to create anything. They only have the desire to destroy what has been created by someone else, by someone else's work. Just as Satan only has a desire to destroy what it is that the Lord created. He lacks creative spark. And his children lack creative spark. Now, MCC, run up to these people and start trying to tell them about Jesus. And you can come to Jesus. They're wasting your time. They did somebody like that. They're a child of the devil. The tares aren't ever going to become wheat. How the hell is a tare going to become wheat? It is what it is. They are what they are. Jesus said, you are of your father, the devil. So you do his works. You speak his language. We're supposed to recognize this. He told us very clearly. How are you going to know what you're dealing with? By their works. By their works, by their deeds. You will know them. You will know who they are. You will know what they are. They lack a creative spirit. They don't have that. All they can do is come in and destroy. Why destroy, you know, the Star Wars franchise? Why not just make a new franchise about lesbian space witches or something? Because they can't. They are literally incapable of it. You're asking the impossible. You might as well ask a giraffe to swim across the ocean. They're not able to do that. They're incapable of it. They're restricted by the boundary of the patterns of who they come from. Now, this shouldn't be confused with the Calvinist type notion that people are already predestined. That there doesn't matter, nothing matters. Because where you're going to wind up is already predetermined. You're just following a script. It shouldn't be confused with that notion, which I disagree with. What we're saying, what we're pointing out here is, just as Jesus said, there are people who literally are going to be unable to, for the simple fact that they're not from the Creator God. As Jesus said, they are children of the devil. By their works you will know them. When they're incapable of any sort of creative spark, they can only follow the desire to come into something that has been created and destroy it. Don't waste your time. Now, there are people that do destructive things. Sin is always destructive. That's the key feature of sin. It's sold to you under the lie that it's pleasurable. And it may be. There may be a moment's pleasure in it. But it's always destructive. It's always destructive at the end. When somebody shoots up a big dose of heroin in their arm, they do so because they feel pleasure, calm in that moment. But nobody looks at a heroin addict and says, well, they've really got their life together. I want to be that guy. Because it's always destructive. We don't have to be mainlining heroin. Sin is always destructive. It's always sold to you as that moment of pleasure is going to be totally worth it. But it's always destructive. It's always corrosive. It corrodes at your soul. You know, it's always on some level going to be destructive. Now, you can see people, they're partaking in sin because we're all fallen and we all sin. And well, we do, because we sin, at some point, at some level, we have a destructive thing going on in our lives. Because again, we're not free of sin in the sense that we're in this world. We're always going to be dealing with it. But you see, that's an entirely different thing. Remember, free will doesn't go away. You have your free will. You exercise your free will, and it takes you different places. You're going to wind up in these different places. And people, you can see somebody and you'd be like, man, that guy's a real asshole. You know, he lives a really sinful life. But that person might still come to the Lord and start doing the work to repent of all of that. What we're talking about here is when you see these definite things where people are incapable, don't waste your time. That's a separate thing. This is one of the reasons you understand why Jesus put so many things into parables to give these illustrations. You know, some of the seed when the farmer's planting, some of the seeds land on shallow ground. Well, they're still wheat seeds. They just don't have enough ground to take root, but they're still wheat. They're not a tare. It just doesn't have enough root, or it lands on the stony path and they just can't accept it because they're so caught up in the things of the world. where they're so surrounded by so many sinful people, you better watch. There's another implication. Jesus warning you about the company you keep. Don't let your seed be amongst all the thistle, all the thorn, all the briar, because it'll choke you out. Be careful of the company you keep. See in these parables. Use these parables trying to cover so many things. You don't want to be surrounded by people who are going to choke you out. Some of the seed winds up and gets choked out because of the company they keep. But there's still a wheat seed. And yet, he also talks about tares and wheat. There are some among that are not wheat seed to begin with. He tells you, you'll know the difference. You'll know if you're dealing with a wheat seed that's in the process of being choked out, or you're dealing with a wheat seed that's in shallow ground and is having a hard time taking root, having a hard time getting going, being choked out by the desires of the world and they can't understand. But you are still dealing with a wheat seed. But he warns, not everybody you're dealing with is a wheat seed. Don't waste your time on the tares because they're not going to change. They can't. They're literally never going to become wheat. You see, this is hard. This is difficult. You mean we've got to figure out what we're dealing with and you got to look at this and trust in God and guide in his judgment and all of this. And some people are going to be a complete waste of time to even mess with, while other people are going to just be in various phases of being lost and we're trying to give them some guidance. Yes, that's what it means. If it's easy, everybody would be doing it. I do. I laugh when MCC acts like, you know, the easiest religion in the world is Christianity. Just accepting Jesus is the easiest thing in the world. That's how you know you're dealing with somebody who's got no idea what the hell they're talking about. It's hard. That's why it always comes back to only a few. Jesus himself said, a lot are going to try to enter, but only a few will make it. How do they read that? How do they read that and then turn around and tell, oh, it's easy. All you got to do is say you accept Jesus and everybody gets in. You know, how do you think they square that in their minds? Where Jesus said, you know, be careful because a lot of people are going to try to get in, only a few. It's only a few because it's hard. It means every day you say, I'm going to do my best. Live for the Lord. Try to understand something about the Lord today. You know, whether I take a few minutes in prayer or I take a few minutes in reading the Bible, it's not always possible when you're on your work grind. God knows this. That's why that was the original purpose of setting aside Sabbath days. Not to make it some sort of big rule following. He understood that the people had to work, but they also needed time to just stop everything and recenter and refocus on the Lord. So he would set up a Sabbath day. They would stop, not do any work, and get recentered and refocused on the Lord. Whether you're able, you're in a position to do that every day, or whether you're in a position to where you need to take one day a week and you shut everybody out of your life and you think about the Lord, you got to have that time. Think about the Lord. And you see how that's reflective of when is written. You know, for some, you know, certain days are more holy or special than other days. For others, every day is the same. You see how that's reflective of that? When every day is the same, doesn't mean every day doesn't matter. It means every day is basically a Sabbath day. You're seeking the Lord every day. For some people, they can't do that because they're too busy with other things. For those people, they need to have a set day. They say, well, this Wednesday, this Thursday, it doesn't really matter what day. Everybody's going to be out of the house. I'm going to sit around. I'm going to pray. And I'm going to spend at least an hour or so praying and focusing on the Lord and just clearing my mind. Clearing my mind and asking the Lord to show me some things. To help me understand. That effort. The effort will bear fruit. It will. You may not see it right away, but the effort will bear fruit. One of the things I find amazing is how all of these things, I actually hit my face on the mic. Hopefully that didn't come across. All of these things are interrelated. It may sound like me rambling, and it is a little bit of me rambling, but that's because one thing leads to another, and this is tied into this, and I see these things, and if you seek the Lord, you'll begin to see more of these things too. How everything is connected. This means connected to that, and it's connected to that, and oh, see where he was talking about this. If you link that up with this other parable, that makes sense. And you can't help but start just keep pulling these threads and chasing these threads and say, well, Jesus talked about this. And then he talked about that. You wind up going to all these places. And this is what it means to seek and understand the Lord. When I talk about, you know, if you set just some time away, whether it's once a week or if you have ability every day, whatever. You seeking out the Lord. It's not necessarily even praying. It's when you start seeing things. You open your mind and start understanding how this is related to this and all of these things. Be tied together. An interesting thing here, as we get ready to wrap up, I just finished reading the book of Nehemiah. Now, the book of Nehemiah in the Old Testament is one of those books that's probably hard for most people to get through. The book of Nehemiah is one of those books that most people read. It's one of those books that no doubt is, by and large, ignored. In most churches you go to today, you go down to your corner MCC of whatever denomination of what's happening now, and I can just about virtually guarantee you there's not going to be a sermon up on their little letter board. This Sunday, we're going through the book of Nehemiah. It's a book. If you read the Bible, you're going to read this book and you're going to be like, this has got nothing to do with me. This has nothing to do with my life. This has nothing to do with Jesus. This is nothing more than a historical record, Nehemiah's efforts to rebuild the temple of the Lord. That's it. With all these difficult to pronounce names from people that have been dead for so many centuries that are hard to pronounce, a list. All these guys, you have no idea who they are, the different works they did, and the different undertakings. It's a historical record. Yeah, these guys did these things. But that doesn't mean anything for me. And having just concluded reading the book of Nehemiah, I was thinking that one of the ways, by the way, when you run into these books, one of the ways it's easier to get through the book is to make an effort to take your time, read it, reading your one chapter at a time, slow down, and take the effort to actually make sure you try to pronounce these names correctly. This is one of the ways I get through these difficult-to-read books like this. Because you just start skimming through there because you're thinking in their mind, this has nothing to do with me. I don't really care about their efforts to rebuild the temple centuries ago. Take the time. I go through and I take the time to try to pronounce these because these were real people that existed. And they did things that were honorable enough to be written down and recorded here. As a sign of respect, we take the time to do our best to pronounce their names correctly. To acknowledge their existence. It's acknowledged in the Bible. We should acknowledge them. They earned that. And as I finished the book of Nehemiah, I pondered for a moment the relevance. Nehemiah, these efforts he went through to rebuild the temple of the Lord. It's an interesting story. Shows up, he makes this effort, doing the quickie version here. But you know, as they undertake this, when they first start, everybody's basically laughing at them. That temple is a mess. I mean, there's hardly anything left. You know, there's trees growing up out of the walls, all the stones. You're just basically, they walk into what amounts to a bunch of ruins and say, we're going to fix this up to its as close as we can to its original condition. All the while knowing they weren't actually going to be able to return it to the splendor condition that it was in when it was first built, but we're going to do the best we can. And people are like, man, y'all wasting your time. And they go about it one thing at a time, Well, okay, first thing we need to do is pick up this pile of rubble and set it over here and start cleaning. And cleaning the brush out, doing this stuff, you know, start picking up the things, seeing what we have, one step at a time. And as they progress, another group of people who logically, you know, doesn't have anything to do with them, they take it upon themselves. They are driven to start attacking, to start trying to thwart this work. They shouldn't have anything to do with them, but they can't stand what these guys are doing. So these guys wind up slowing down their work because now, as they do the work on the temple, as they're starting to make some progress. See, when they first started, everybody just laughed at them. But when they started showing signs of progress, then they started getting attacked. So now they're having to do the work while carrying a sword and a spear around with them, which, of course, is going to slow them down. They have to carry their sword and spear around with them. Now, you may be sitting here going, yeah, I still don't see what that has to do with me. We're going to circle back to what we started talking about. You're made in the image of the Lord. Because Jesus is the completion of the law and the prophets, that means it's the completion of God's original intent when he started off, when he first created Adam, when he created the first man, is that completion. Because of Jesus is the completion of this. This means God's original intent can be fulfilled. If we are made in the image of the Lord, then guess what is the temple that is being rebuilt? As you walk in your faith in Christ, as you walk in this faith, what does it mean? You are Nehemiah. And it is your own temple. It is the temple of the Lord. Yourself. Yourself that you are rebuilding. When you come to the Lord, people be laughing and be like, man, how you talking about you going to start following Jesus, man? We know all the stuff you done. Where are you even going to start? Your temples are ruined, man. Everybody in town knows what kind of person you are. You ain't going to get nowhere. You just got to start somewhere. I guess I'll start cleaning up over here in the corner. If we don't do anything, nothing's going to happen. We've got to start cleaning up over here in the corner, putting all this work in. Hello. All the work in. Got to start somewhere. And then as you progress, rebuilding the temple of the Lord, which is yourself, you made in the image of God, as you continue and you start showing some headway, people are going to start attacking you. Then they go from mocking you to being hostile. Who do you think you are? You got to start walking around with a sword, so as to speak, a spiritual sword. You got to start walking around understanding. All of a sudden, people are starting to be hostile to you. Don't understand why. It shouldn't have anything to do with them. What do they care? You're rebuilding the temple of the Lord, which is yourself, made in the image of God. What do they care? Why do they feel compelled to try to stop me from doing that? There are all sorts of forms those attacks can take. They might try to sound like they're your friends. They're going to try to drag you back off. They want to get you to stop that work. Somebody trying to drag you back off into sin. That's just as much of an attack as if they jump on you and punch you in the face. You see, they're hostile to you. They can't stand what you're doing. Why are they trying to drag you back off into sin? Doesn't have anything to do with them. They can go. You're not stopping them from going and living in sin. Go live in sin. Go to hell. Why do I care? Why are they trying to stop you? But they do. See, that's the attacks. Some of the attacks are like that. They come up with a smile on their face. Man, let's go hang out and do this, that, or the other. Try to get you back. Get you back into that pattern. Sin. You got to start carrying that sword with you. No, ain't doing that. Man, what's wrong with you? Who do you think you are? You think you're too good to come do what you used to do? We all know you used to do that. How come you're not doing it now? Oh, now you're too good to hang out with us, huh? Your friends aren't good enough for you? See, these are attacks. Better have your sword with you and be ready. This is all an effort to stop you from building that temple. You see? So you take a book like Nehemiah and you go through it, and you might have gone through it before, and it's like every time you go through, this is one of them boring books about rebuilding the temple. Doesn't have nothing to do with me or anything else in the Bible, and it has everything to do with it. The book of Nehemiah has as much to do with what Jesus taught as the Gospels. This historical record of building a temple has got as much to do with what Jesus was telling us in all his parables as what you read in the Gospels. And they skip over it because who wants to hear about that? You see, this is what understanding is. If you rebuild your temple long enough, these things will start becoming clear to you. You start understanding these things. And then you look around and you say, my gosh. You look at these MCC churches and the preacher don't even have any idea either. You literally got the blind leading the blind. They all going to fall into a ditch because ain't nobody got any idea what the hell they're even talking about. My gosh. Anyway, that's got a little wound up there. Jesus said the blind leading the blind. You got blind guides. People don't know. The sheep don't know. Sheep looking for a shepherd to guide them. And you got somebody don't run up there. Oh yeah, I'm the one to guide you. And then somebody's blind. He ain't got no idea where he's going either. Leading them along to a ditch. See, that's why it's hard. That's why it's difficult. That's why he said, be careful. A lot of people are going to try to get in. Only a few are going to be able to do it. Because it is hard. Definitely worth it. You want to fulfill. You want fulfillment. You want meaning in your life. Find out why you have it to begin with. Why are you here? Why did God create man in the first place? Once you come to understand that, you're going to find meaning in your life because you're going to start fulfilling why you're here to begin with, if that makes sense. Anyway, we got to wrap up on that note. I appreciate it. Hope you enjoyed today's show. As always, I especially hope you got something out of this week's Christian-specific segment, the highlight of the show. I do appreciate all of you stopping by, and hopefully I'll see you here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.